On today's episode of Talkin' Tom, we laughed, we cried, we banged our hands on the piano as we watched A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, starring Tom Hanks.
A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood is a 2019 drama film starring American icon Tom Hanks as American icon Fred Rogers.
My mom always said, life was like a box of chocolates.
What's up, Hanks heads? Welcome back to another episode of Talkin' Tom, the Pod Hanks Tomcast, where we watch Tom Hanks movies and then we talk about them.
It's been a minute.
It has been so many minutes. My name's Josie.
My name's Daniel.
And we are two Christmas elves who watch the movie It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Wait, Won't You Be My Neighbor?
A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, yeah.
Oh, fuck. What is the movie called?
A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood is the movie, and then Watching My Neighbor was the documentary.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God. Fake Tom Hanks fan.
Which we should probably preface today's episode that if you're going to see this movie, you should, I think, watch the documentary first.
Yeah.
I think it gives you a little more oomph to what's to come. Oh, okay.
And also, as of this recording, it's chaos in here. Yeah. As of this recording, the movie is still in theaters.
Yeah.
So if you've mistakenly clicked this episode thinking that we're going to do a spoiler-free version of the show...
You're wrong.
I mean...
Yeah.
Interesting thought.
I respect research going into things, but we're here to chat Tom.
Yeah,
and
we're
to
here
talk
to talk Tom.
We have to it's the spoil nature. Things.
The titular...
The titular Hanks.
Yeah. So, but before we do that, we should do some housekeeping.
Yeah.
I haven't seen you in many moons.
It's been a while.
I know. It's like this,
very busy.
It's
You've
hard.
Been insanely busy.
It's been a fucking year, man. I think it's hard when we do a show like this that it's not monetized, that we're just doing for fun.
Yeah.
To make time when we have got other paying jobs.
Because there's this, and then there's the homework of the movie, and then you have to sit with the movie and think about it and like make notes, which I did not do.
Right, and but, it's so hard because I feel such pressure to be so hilarious and charming in these episodes.
Yeah, you got to work all your jokes.
What is happening outside?
I think we started recording right as the garbage collection.
Oh
comes.
Yeah,
but I think that's appropriate for the year.
True.
So we'll just let that play out.
Yeah.
Just incredible, beautiful.
Kevin is watching from the window.
Yeah.
So, it's December.
It is. Almost Christmas time. You have some Christmas plans.
I do. I'm going on a trip to London.
That's
there right now.
So exciting.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
How do you feel being there right now?
I love it. I've already I have a British accent.
That's so cool.
I've appropriated it.
What's your favorite British food item? Like, especially... It's like scones are my favorite thing in
you
the world.
You fucking love scones.
The name a better thing. Wait a second. Have you ever made scones?
I don't think I've ever made... No. I should.
I would love to tell you how good your scones are.
Okay.
That's just getting me out of having to do anything. I just want to try them.
Okay. I don't know. What is like a British food? Like fish and chips, which I don't eat.
Fish and chips. You have like shepherd's pie.
Shepherd's pie. We had a lot of that growing up.
Well, I think the big thing in the UK is there's a lot of Indian food.
Uh huh.
So much good.
Marmite
and
marmalade.
Oh yes.
I love Marmite. You don't like marmalade.
I love marmalade.
You do.
I don't love Marmite.
You don't love Marmite. That's fine. It's a very acquired taste.
Yeah, I think if I ate it a few more times, I might like it.
I think you got to be like, I was fully immersed in Marmite from like day one.
Respect.
Kevin. Kevin has a little unicorn toy.
She's like, oh, we recorded.
Me.
Let's play.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to take this.
Kevin.
Thank you so much.
It's so cute. Anyway.
But yeah, that's really exciting.
It is exciting. You're traveling back home.
I'm going to Oklahoma, and I'm bringing Kevin with me.
Has she ever been on a plane before?
No.
She's going to be so sweet.
I hope so. I think she will. She loves to travel in terms of the car and around town, so I think it'll be good. and she gets to meet the family. And we have a family dog back home that she'll get to hang out with in a backyard, which she doesn't have in LA.
So something that we haven't talked about yet, because it's been 6 months since we recorded an episode, is that it's been like 2 years of the podcast.
Yeah.
2 years, man.
That's pretty crazy.
I mean, off and on.
Pretty consistent. I think this is the longest break, but I would say consistently at least an episode a month. Most of the time, two.
Yeah.
Were we doing it weekly at the beginning?
No.
It was always by week.
I think we never were that ambitious.
I mean, at the beginning, I was like, that would be so easy.
Whew. Oh my God. No.
I have massive respect to folks who keep a weekly podcast. It is a...
Yeah. When you have other obligations.
Yeah.
I'm almost 30, man. I don't have, like...
Yeah.
It's just not something that I can really fit into my life.
But I like it. It's almost therapeutic.
It's nice to have... To be able to have an excuse to watch a Tom Hanks movie.
Yeah, it truly is. And we continue to only hear great things, so... Yes. About the man.
Yeah.
About us, I don't know.
Yeah, well... So, we went and saw Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood...
With a nice size, we went with a bunch of friends.
A bunch of friends.
This is a solid friend experience. In terms of as you experience it. And then afterwards, you just kind of want to be alone.
Yes. Okay. So I have theories about this movie.
Okay.
First of all, the movie is not what you think it is.
No.
I think if you don't do any research, you kind of go into this movie thinking it's going to be like a biopic.
Well, all the advertising points at this is a movie... about Mr. Rogers at its core.
Yeah, but that's not the case.
No, I think for the better,
mm-hmm.
personally.
So the story focuses on a character named... Oh, frick, I looked it up and I forgot it.
Lloyd Vogel.
Oh, is it Vogel?
Is it not?
What did you say?
Lloyd Vogel?
Oh, I don't know. I'm very drunk. Oh. Lloyd Vogel, who is a reporter with like a...
He's for Esquire?
For Esquire, yeah. Sure. He's a new father. Sorry.
This is based on a real... The story is based on a real story that was in Esquire, but people's names have been changed.
People's names have been changed. But the whole thing was about that Velveteen Rabbit or something. That was like the whole thing. I know we did it. We talked about it in a Talkin' Tom at one... Or a Talk Tom. What is it called?
Talk Tom to Us?
No.
Or Talkin' Tom? Or Hanks Happening?
Holy shit. There are like multiple Tom Hanks themed podcasts out now, and that's good because they're probably doing a much better job than we are.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, we should start a feud.
Yeah, let's start some beef.
Yeah, it's super against everything that Tom Hanks stands for, but
yeah, but it's 2019. We're mad.
Yeah, we're canceling.
And we're gonna start evil things online.
Oh boy. So
he's a reporter for Esquire.
He's a reporter for Esquire. He's a new father, and he has just been like reconnected with his father.
Yeah, not by choice. Happy way. Yeah,
his father is like kind of an asshole, and the whole movie is basically focused on the two of their relationship, and Mr. Rogers kind of plays a sweet little part in it.
Yeah, it sort of tricks you again because you think it's going to be about. So they set up that it's going to be about. Well, it opens with this great sequence of. The opening of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
But then it gets really weird. Like, very experimental filmmaking where, like, he opens up his little, like, picture window and, like, there's Lloyd and he's, like,
bloodied. He's got, like, bloodied. A broken nose.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of, that, it's nice because at first you're like, oh, this is so comfortable. Tom Hanks is so good. And then it really takes a shift. But then you kind of think it's going to be about the story, about him writing the story about Mr. Rogers. And then it's not even really about that. It's sort of about connection and grief and, family and
forgiveness.
Yeah. Sort of the values of what Mr. Rogers taught.
Mm-hmm. The whole thing, pardon me, the whole thing is like a little mini episode of Mr. Rogers' show.
Yeah.
What is the show called? Holy shit.
Isn't it Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood?
Okay, great. Yeah, that's probably
that it. Sounds right.
Yeah, so the whole thing is like an episode of that.
We've done our research.
For grown-ups. Did you watch the show when you were little?
Not a lot. I would watch it at my grandparents' house because they didn't have like proper cable or like expanded cable, but they had basic and it had PBS, so I'd watch it there.
There you go.
But I think when I have brief memories of it, and then I think I was a little older past its sort of part by the time I realized kind of what it was.
Okay.
But I was always aware of Mr. Rogers.
Okay. I think I watched it a lot when I was little. I have, like, very, like, sense memories of, like, the sweater being put on and, like, watching it. I don't remember any of the puppets, really, but I remember that opening. I'm sure I've seen the beginning of many episodes.
The puppets were what I remembered the most of, because they were kind of scary to me.
Puppets in general, or just
those puppets, because they were sort of old and talk about in the movie and in the documentary.
Yeah.
Something there was. I think I missed sort of when I should have been watching it, so I watched a little bit later, some of it, but like not. I wouldn't say I was like a Mr. Rogers kid.
So kind of like what Lloyd does.
I think so. Yeah.
He watches the movies or the show like in his 30s.
Yeah.
Okay. How do you want to break this down?
I think, I guess we can talk about how each phase of the movie in terms of, so there's like the Mr. Rogers show at the core, and the way that they do that is very cool. They have they shoot it in all this old equipment that looks, and I found out they shot it in the real facility that Mr. Rogers' neighborhood was shot in.
How cute is that?
And
in Philadelphia?
Yeah. Or in, is it Jersey?
I don't, I'm literally just saying things.
There's like these recreations of the set and recreations of how everything works with all these miniatures. And there's these great moments where every time there's like a travel montage, like when Lloyd's going from New York to go to the set, it'll show like it's back in like his little miniature world, like traveling. And there's really cute touches like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get moments of the show that play out and sort of see Mr. Rogers like as the character, because part of it is sort of who we are in person and who we are in front of the camera, sort of the thing. And you sort of realize that he's kind of one and the same.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, there's a great moment with his wife where they talk about how he doesn't want to be separated, but he doesn't want to be called a priest either, because that makes it seem unattainable. His idea is to present a personality of sort of compassion and that is so people can strive to be more like. He doesn't want to be, because the central question is, does he consider himself a hero? And I think he says that he doesn't. He sees himself as like hopefully a role model, but he doesn't like the term hero.
Well, yeah, because I think it's, and there's similarities with Tom Hanks too, just as like a public figure. It's so easy to put certain people on these pedestals and be like, well, I could never be like that.
Yeah.
Because they're just different than me. But that's the whole point of Mr. Rogers, is that he's just like a regular human who makes an effort every single day to make strong choices.
When they make within the movie, they comment often on sort of how his attitude and general demeanor sometimes comes across as like either insincere or like over the top, almost creepy.
Mm.
And I think that's important, because I think a public figure like Mr. Rogers, if he existed today out of the blue in the same manner he did, would come across that way.
Yeah, it's like a man who like loves little kids.
Yeah.
I mean, forgive me for being so crass. That's like,
yeah,
that's the problem.
And there's just the way he speaks to people, he has like this unbreakable eye contact and sort of his tone of voice, his inflection is very much soothing, but almost like could feel manipulative. And he ultimately is not that way. His intentions are good. The movie presents him as good. And I think from everything we know about Fred Rogers, that was...
It all lines up. It seems to be...
So it is... I mean, there isn't... Tom Hanks is the epitome of that in terms of a public figure, an actor, or a someone that's in front of the... public figure. I don't know what I'm trying to explain.
Yeah.
But he is sort of that embodiment now, and different reasons, just sort of being like a quintessential good guy. Different from Mr. Rogers, but still the same type of the way we look up to them and sort of respect their craft.
Exactly. And we just kind of like revere them as these just like untouchable pillars of society.
Yeah.
I guess. Okay. So... did they shoot some of this stuff on the actual old equipment, or it just looks like it?
I don't know. I didn't dive super far into like the technical things. I just know that they shot it in the actual studios. And it was Pittsburgh, you were right.
Oh, hell yeah.
But they...
Because there's like portions of the movie that are in the standard, like in like high definition, like really beautiful. And then there's like the stuff that's supposed to look like the TV show that's...
Yeah. Standard. And it does. It says the crew consulted with original crew members from Rogers television series and also brought in the same broadcast cameras and monitors used in the production. So the reason it looked like it did is because it was great. because it was the real stuff.
Okay, so they did it on purpose.
Yeah. Well, so then we have sort of Lloyd's story as a reporter, which is I think a lot of this is based on a true story. It's based on his article, but shifted slightly, a little bit fictitious for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And you said he's a family man, a new family man, mm-hmm. struggling with abandonment issues from his dad.
And a lot of anger, surrounding that abandonment.
Like, housed internally. Sometimes externally, because the movie opens with a fight at his sister's wedding, mm-hmm. where he punches his father and his father hits him back. So there's a lot about that, and sort of the whole concept of Mr. Rogers talks about in the documentary, how his show is an avenue for how kids want to learn how to deal with their emotions, because mm-hmm. they have no idea what they're experiencing.
Yeah, they have no idea.
And it's sort of how that's timeless wherever you are.
Well, I can't remember if this is in the movie or not, or if this is like an article that I read about Mr. Rogers. His whole thing is that he talks to little kids like they're grown-ups.
Yeah.
Obviously, kind of dumbs down, but he doesn't speak to them like they're idiots.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've always found so... like, no wonder we all liked him so much.
It's weird because it seems so simple, but it is a skill set you have to have, because you instinctually want to be on what you assume their intellect level is,
mm-hmm.
which is maybe bad on us.
Yeah.
But it is. Yeah, it's strange.
So as Lloyd is doing this story about what it means to be a hero, specifically focused on Mr. Rogers, he develops a closer relationship with him, and Mr. Rogers is super invested in this guy's life.
Yeah.
Like, he wants to know what he treats him like one of the kids, basically. And it's like a therapy set, interesting.
Cause he goes to interview him, and it's pretty basic interview stuff. He tries to get into some of the nitty gritty of why would you want to do this? Blah, blah, blah.
When are you not Mr. Rogers? Yeah.
And then it's reverse psychology. It becomes an interview with Lloyd about his emotions that he's struggling with. Mm-hmm. And I think Lloyd's super skeptical at first. And there's a moment where him and his wife are in bed, and she says, don't ruin my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is a great line for 2019, because we exist in a time where all these predators and evil folks are being smited from their platforms because of the decisions they made that ruined people's lives. And so a lot of them have been figures people thought they respected. And so there's always that fear of mm-hmm. that now. And so this idea of don't go investigating this person, that means a lot to me.
Yeah.
Because it's personal to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And you can't just not do it. And I liked that the film wasn't afraid to, not that there was anything, but to make Mr. Rogers a human at its core.
Mm-hmm.
Even though these are the things he does and they're good, they're still, to Lloyd, it comes across as off-putting, and that's just how some people are going to take that. I thought that was a cool decision. He's not painted as... he's painted as he was, which I think is very close to... perfect is not the right word, but he's painted as a very good guy, but...
he doesn't ever seem to make the wrong decision.
Yeah.
He's always so compassionate and so understanding, even when Lloyd is so cruel to him. Lloyd will just berate him for the puppets, or say really mean things, and it's I know a few people that have that same kind of energy as Mr. Rogers, where they're able to see those remarks and see those hurtful things that people are doing and see them for exactly what they are, which is really a cry for help, or a deep sign of hurt and torment.
Yeah. It's a gift, though, I think, for the way that he uses it, at least in the film, because I think being called out on that would upset people, and it does upset Lloyd, but there's a way to sort of spin it around, because he does stuff he gets close to his wife over the phone, mm-hmm. and there are little things that he does that just lets him know that this is not just a therapy thing to him, it's it means something to him.
Mr. Rogers gets close with Lloyd's wife.
Yeah.
Yes.
That I think is really interesting. I think this could have been just a standard biopic, and it would have been interesting, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But the documentary that came out a year or two ago already captures that. So coming in knowing that, I'd be curious to talk to someone who has a base knowledge of Mr. Rogers but didn't see the documentary, perhaps.
Because
mm-hmm. I think it adds a lot to know sort of where he is in this life, because we're at a point that we sort of know about.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, it's, I don't know, it's a strange, it's sort of a drama, not about, Tom Hanks is a supporting actor in this.
That was something that we talked about when we got out of the theater. That is, it's just, yeah, you go in thinking this is going to be Tom's movie, and it's not really.
Yeah, I mean, he steals everything he's in, mm-hmm. as would be expected, but I think I realize if that was the whole movie, it would become tired.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because it's intense. Like, Mr. Rogers was an intense man in terms of one-on-one conversation. The way he talks, his mannerisms, it's very slow and methodical, and he thinks, and the movie like lets that linger because that's important, I think, to how he existed.
Mm-hmm. So there's a very weird, like, hallucinogenic, like, dream sequence partway, maybe, what, like a third of the way through the movie? Mm-hmm. No, two-thirds? It's pretty far in. And starts with Lloyd entering an episode of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, yeah. and then his wife is there, and he's a puppet, or like,
yeah,
it's like, what? Tell me what your thoughts are on that scene.
It's basically Lloyd's become. I mean, we sort of learn about his backstory as a writer, and he's respected, but also sort of infamous for the way he gets his interviews, and he never makes people look good. He like digs in to the subjects he's doing. So there's an expectation that he's doing this as sort of what he's going to pull out of this, and becomes kind of obsessed with him. He's watching his episodes. He's talking with him. He sort of thinks he hates him, but also is so enamored with him, and it just becomes like a part of his psyche. And then he has this wild fever dream. That's really cool to watch just because it's so bizarre, of him. Like he's like next to the king,
yeah,
and Tom Hanks like tries to pick him up or something. It's mm-hmm. it's very
weird.
And he's
weird. Next to that little bear or that lion puppet,
mm-hmm. the timid,
who's like really shy.
Daniel, the timid lion.
Oh, so throughout the movie, Lloyd is kind of forced to reckon with his relationship with his father. He avoids it for quite a long time.
Yeah. His father's literally sitting outside of his house for a chunk of the movie, trying mm-hmm. to get to
him. Atone, yeah. yeah. And it ends up with his father like having a massive heart attack or something.
Yeah, I think we learned that the dad had come back into his life because he was dying, or he had been told bad news at the doctor and wanted to reconnect. And Lloyd isn't having it at first. And then while they're at his house, because his wife obviously wants, if there's a way to fix this, she wants that for him. Mm-hmm. And I think, was it a heart attack or?
I can't remember.
Some type of,
it's Lloyd is like screaming at him, saying yeah. some very awful things. I know that there were a lot of parts in this movie that made people cry. I actually didn't cry, which is surprising because it's kind of my personal brand to just sob in movie theaters. But I don't know. And maybe it's because like, I feel good about my relationship with my father. I don't know. Well, not that you have to. I feel like this movie was kind of a more like male-centric story.
Yeah.
Is that overgeneralizing?
No, and I have the same. I have a great relationship with my dad, so I don't feel. I think they do a pretty good job of painting. You get into Lloyd's psyche and why he feels this way, and I think it feels appropriate with what we're told as we're told it. Eventually, we sort of learn the reasons why, and there's some sadness there and grief there. But there is, I imagine, it is elevated if this is something you've experienced, if you have a person in your life that's like this.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, I forgot to mention the his repressed childhood trauma dream. The end of it, he sees his dying mother, who
yes.
we learn his father left when he was young, while his mother was dying. And she and his vision urges him to sort of forgive him, basically.
Mm-hmm.
That was important for later.
Yeah. So what happens?
So then they bring the dad, falls ill, and this is before the hallucination, because the dad falls ill, they take him to the hospital, and Lloyd leaves to go, he has to finish his interview, and then mm-hmm. while he's there is when he collapses, so he also has a
yeah, Lloyd is like moment. so trying so hard to not think about the painful reality of this, like, and I forgiveness is like such a tricky thing, because yeah. when you are angry, you're not really like serving that anger isn't going where you think it's going, right? Like, that hurts you more. It's like, my friend has used this metaphor with me thousands of times. It's like holding onto a hot stone. Like, you're not, that's fucking hurting you, man. Like, you don't need to be so angry about people that have hurt you because you're only hurting yourself. But Lloyd is unable, obviously, to get to that point. It's a very hard space to be in. And he ends up making himself, like, pretty sick.
Yeah. It's interesting because there's a lot of the core of the movie being about, like, sort of the mental element of these things in relationships and repression and grief and suffering and forgiveness that I think is cool. Because they don't always, there's not always a speech about it. There's occasionally one, but a lot of it's just sort of the is factor.
Yeah.
That I think is important and things I can relate to because it's things you don't talk about and it's like things that therapy maybe helps you unlock. But if you're not, if you know, that's something you haven't looked into or something you can't deal with at the moment, like it's just sort of the way it lives in you and you can't control it.
Right.
It, there's things I think could be considered contrivances of the plot, but I don't think that's the case with this because this is just sort of how that sort of stuff gets to you. It just sort of makes you make stupid things where you're like, why would he leave his dad to do this? He could reschedule that. Well, that's not the point. It's not a plot thing. It's like literally his mental state is I have to leave because that proves that I don't care. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to prove that to himself because he feels the guilt inside still, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the choices like that are cool because it doesn't just spoon feed you them all the time. It makes you have to
cope
with him the same way.
It's so complicated because I think we can all relate to that feeling of being so angry at someone who, and maybe it's a deserved response. Like somebody has really hurt you, or in this case, Lloyd's father has done some pretty awful things. Yeah. It makes sense that Lloyd isn't ready to forgive him or might not ever be.
Yeah.
Like that makes sense. I don't think that the answer, and I definitely don't think the message of this movie is that forgiveness is always the right choice. Maybe it is. Maybe that is the message. That's not my personal belief.
No, I think it's just, this is making you confront that question, I think.
Yes.
Where there's not a right or wrong. It's just you have to confront it eventually, though, how you're going to, if you live it this way, then you have to forgive yourself essentially.
Yes.
Like one way or the other, you have to make a choice that it quits because it's Lloyd's life is defined by this and it can't because he needs to be a different version of himself to succeed in work and as a father and a husband.
Yeah.
And it's affecting him. So
it is. It's like ruining his life. And he thinks he's always thought he had more time, so he never had to deal with any of it. But now he has to deal with it.
Yeah. And it comes boiling to the surface when dad returns and then gets immediately sick.
Well, that's almost unfair in and of itself. It's like, now you're back, now that you're dying. Like, that's not fair.
Well, that's sort of... Where were you? It's sort of on the opposite, and it's the dad realizing his decisions, the time for him to... whatever guilt he holds now has to be... reconciled now because there's no time after that.
Mm-hmm.
And if he doesn't do it now, then there is no... So he doesn't come asking for money. There's no, like... I mean, there's the component of, like, he's coming to be back in your life to some degree, but he's not coming to be like, I can't afford medical bills. He's just like, I'm dying and I hold this inside and we have to confront it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is tough.
It is tough. I also feel like the dad does do some, like, other fucked up shit, like him kind of punishing his son for making him sit in his car. Like he says, like, treat me like I'm an animal or like a homeless person. I can't remember what he says, but like something like, yeah, no shit, he made you sit on the street, you left. Like,
well, I like that because they're still making the dad who he is, and you see the why, you see the moments where we don't see the actual moment when he left, but you see this person that you're like, you're on Lloyd's side. And then so then when it makes you sort of brings in like these not pity but sort of empathetic moments,
mm-hmm.
and you're like, he's such a dick. Like,
yeah.
And I like that. I like that it doesn't make it easy. It shouldn't be easy from a story perspective. Like you have to feel it, and I think you do.
Well, because if there's one thing that I've learned through the many years of therapy that I've paid multiple. I put a ton of resources into therapy. The biggest thing I've learned, and that I can't say I've like fully learned it. I still have the instinct to think of the world. It's a cognitive dissonance to think of the world in black and white terms, right? Mm. So you think Lloyd is like, Lloyd's right. His dad left him, whatever. The dad's also got his own shit. Maybe he was terrified at the thought of losing his wife. Like we could justify nobody is all bad and nobody is all good. The world does not exist in the black and white. It exists in the gray area. Yeah. that's the truth of the matter, and that's like something that we all have to kind of eventually figure out.
And I like that in movies, because it challenges the audience. Who, there's a lot of stuff we can watch in terms of sort of the broader entertainment that gives you a very clear-cut black and white, good, evil, right and wrong type mm-hmm. of thing. So when it gives you something like this, that sort of you have to watch it and make your own decisions, and you think you have a clear thing, and then you learn a little bit more, and then it shifts, because that's how I think life works.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the challenge of that. And it seems, I mean, I've seen people talk about this online, at least in terms of people I know, have all really taken to it. Everything started with not what I thought it would be, but like a very, like, it's such an experience to sort of live through, because I think maybe thinking it's going to be one thing and it's not is sort of, because that's sort of the movie, how the story works too. Maybe that works from a, maybe that it was advertised intentionally that way.
Maybe. So the movie ends with,
we have Lloyd's dad is taken, goes back to his house, and Lloyd finally shows up and decides to be kind of a caretaker.
Yes. In the midst of that, publishes his giant story on Mr. Yeah. Rogers. That is like way more than the 500 word essay or whatever he was.
Because it's not, it no longer is a story of Mr. Rogers. It's a story of father, son, and how Mr. Rogers fits into that with his ideals almost.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really good. You said you read it?
I did read. I read that article a few years ago. Yeah, when the news of this movie came out.
It's cool. I'd say maybe read it after. Kinda, okay. I'd say maybe see it as with fresh eyes and then go back. But it's cool to see how it sort of connects that way. And so yeah, so he comes to help him recover.
Yeah, or,
I don't even know. It's recovery, but it's sort of just like
this, like accept. He's like, there. They repair their relationship, but in not so many words. I don't think there's ever really a specific moment of like, I forgive you for what you've done.
Yeah,
it's more just like they grow closer. The dad gets to spend time with his grandchild, and
yeah, a lot of it's just wordless.
It's just not abandonment. It's like this coming together. The whole family's there, and Mr. Rogers shows up.
Yes.
And it's so cute.
And my favorite moment of that is Mr. Rogers asks Lloyd's dad to pray for him in his ear, and he whispers something, and then we kind of come outside as Mr. Rogers is leaving with Lloyd, and he asked him what he asked him to pray for, and he said, it was to pray for him, for Mr. Rogers. Mr. Rogers asked Lloyd's dad to pray for him.
Mm-hmm.
Because he said, when you're dying, you're so close to God. Which is a really fascinating thing to, because the sort of, I think Mr. Rogers is a religious man, and the movie doesn't really touch on that. Mm-hmm. It brings it up. I think the documentary is a little bit more, but sort of that insight to the way he thinks and the way his morals and values lie. And even in this moment, this like, what words would he say to this dying man to make him feel that? And he's just like, it's not so much like everything's going to be okay. It's more of like you're in this incredible position on your way to something greater. And could you do me a favor? It almost, I don't know. It's strange. It could be like, it sounds selfish when I say it that way, but it's like such a, I don't know how to phrase it.
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's quite beautiful. Yeah. So that's the movie.
That's it.
I'll tell you what. I think it's incredible that we are living in like a time of storytelling where an entire movie about like kindness and forgiveness and like the beauty of like the human experience can be told in this kind of way.
And I think in a way that will get to audience members that would maybe normally not see something like this.
Right, because who goes to a movie being like, oh, I really want to dive into like my issues with my dad right now? Like, no, people don't go to movies like that.
And there's this sort of, I mean, there's like a subsection of film production that's targeted toward, there's this type of stuff. It's like a lot of religious movies that kind of have a central message like this, but there's a really specific audience for it, and people outside of that audience aren't going to see it. So I think this is sort of an interesting thing because it sort of puts itself in the middle that all types of beliefs and types of people could see it, because there's at the core, there's Mr. Rogers, who you may, or even if you didn't grow up with him, you still know what he represents.
Yeah.
And then put Tom Hanks on top of that, someone that you might just see because it's Tom Hanks.
Yeah, I know too.
Kind of genius in that regard. Yeah. Like, we would have seen it no matter what, but I think even if we weren't doing this podcast, we absolutely would have seeked this out.
Yeah. It's a great movie for the holidays.
Yeah.
It's
a tough one. I think it's one that if you see with like a family, it's something you'll talk about afterwards, because yeah. But I think it's an important thing because we're in an interesting time period where, I don't know, when growing up, stuff like therapy was a hush-hush thing. Like, I wouldn't go tell my friends in middle school, high school that I was going to therapy. But I think now, I mean, I can only speak for our generation, but like we have become open-minded to it and talk about it. It's an important, the same way we go to the doctor to get a physical, therapy and like conversations like this are important because that is another part of our health.
Yeah, and how wonderful is that?
Yeah, and Tom Hanks and Mr. Rogers say the same. So
yeah, fuck yeah.
If you ever needed a reason to seek out something to talk about, you need Tom Hanks and Mr. Rogers are backing you up.
So let's talk about those performances.
Okay.
Two standouts, obviously.
Yeah.
One, the man of the hour, always the man of every hour, Tom Hanks as Mr. Rogers.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you've heard of him. What do you think of this performance?
You know, when the first trailer came out, I was slightly worried. I got to be honest.
Yeah.
Because the trailer painted it, I thought it was going to be a Mr. Rogers movie. And it had this weird, I had a friend describe it as a Forrest Gumpy vibe. Where it felt,
I think
like
I might have said that.
Yeah, sort of like a caricature.
Yeah.
But then the second the thing starts and you see just the way he physically encapsulates when I think of Mr. Rogers, there's just the speed to his movement and like how delicate everything he does is, and I was immediately in. So it's a hard performance. And it's a performance that is powerful because it is not just someone pretending to be someone. They let him exist as a human. We didn't talk about the very end. This is a great moment. Oh. Mr. Rogers talks about playing the piano and he says,
oh, fuck, we didn't talk about that.
It's in the trailer too, where he says, like, sometimes when you get, you know, when you want to hit all the low notes and when you're angry, or there's like the ways you express your anger. He's like, sometimes I hit all the low notes. At the end of the movie, he's in a studio by himself. He's just rapped an episode and he's playing the piano and he starts to bang the keys, because in the end of the day, he is who he is, but at his core, he still has the same emotions we do. And yeah. I liked that as an
That should give me chills just thinking about it.
It's a really great moment.
It is, and it says so much.
Again, not spoon feeding you. I mean, it sets it up, but it's not like,
right,
everyone gets sad. You're like, no, it's everyone exists, and
we've all have experiences and it's feelings, man.
But I thought, I mean, primo. I'm all about it. What
truly
about
great performance. I mean, I will say that I think Matthew Rhys or Reese stole the show.
He looks just in this so defeated.
It's so good. And I don't even remember any of that in the trailer, but I can't remember the last time I watched the trailer.
You watch the trailer for Tom Hanks. That's the tricky part of it.
That
too.
Is the trick. Yeah. I just wasn't thinking it would be about this guy. I really liked his performance. The same way that when we went and saw Henry IV live, there's something about the way that Tom performs where he is able to elevate. I mean, it's because he's good at it. So this is a revelation I come to every time we talk about him as a performer. He elevates everything around him. It would be so easy for him to just fucking take over this movie as Mr. Rogers, of course. And we all would be, like, probably super into it.
Yeah.
Even the script, like, the script is different. Tom is a supporting character in every sense of the word in this show, in this movie, and it's for the best of the production. It's like, I think Lloyd Vogel's character, it's so nice to go on that journey with him as a character.
You know that person, too. For better,
we've
for
all
worse.
Got something
there's that
there.
Someone you just see, the people that cannot hide it anymore. It just, their world weariness weighs on them physically.
Yeah, they carry that.
Yeah.
Burden. It was just lovely. I love I loved that aspect of it.
It's the perfect type of performance, too, because Tom Hanks is going to get, I assume, awards talk for it. And I don't think Matthew Reese probably won't, but then as this movie ages, he will become sort of the hero of it because his performance grounds it. Mm-hmm. And you need that because Mr. Rogers is such a we assume, a character. Mm-hmm. And so you have to have someone who's grounded.
Yeah.
And like, I still think about that, the line, it's in the trailer too, but the, like, you love broken people like me. And he's like, well, I've never met anyone like quite like you before. And it's like, okay, all right. I get it.
Fucking asshole.
I'm in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really beautiful. I was surprised. I think I went into this thinking I would like it.
Uh-huh.
And it would be, I don't really love biopics.
Right.
Because they're usually
pretty
kind of not my cup of tea.
Yeah.
So the fact that this was not that, but used what makes biopics interesting and then planted an emotional core center to things. I dig it.
It was great. Everyone that we were with seemed to love it.
Yeah.
What did Rachel think?
She also loved it.
Cute.
And also, as a shout out to the director, I think her name is pronounced Marielle Heller.
Okay.
She has a very solid filmography. I hadn't paid attention to who was directing it, which is my own fault. But she did The Diary of a Teenage Girl in 2015, which she wrote and directed. Another kind of coming of age thing. And then she did Can You Ever Forgive Me last year, which was Melissa McCarthy, Richard E. Grant, about the woman who is forging like letters from authors to sell them for money, which had like an okay trailer and then was like this very like introspective look into like friendship and sort of desperation and like how we view ourselves when we're failing if we're artists that see ourselves as failing. She's 3 for 3 in my book. She's really making great stuff, and if this doesn't cement it, is absolutely a director to, I'm really excited to see what she does next.
Oh, that's great. So, this could be a Hanks happening, but I think it actually pairs quite nicely with just the movie in general. The New York Times profile that came out on Tom.
Mm-hmm.
Did you read that?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Piece of writing, first of all. But it's kind of
the Euro article, almost.
It's exactly that. So the article is called "This Tom Hanks Story Will Help You Feel Less Bad," written by Taffy Broadesser Ackner. And it's kind of the whole premise of the article is that Tom Hanks is known as being the nice guy. And when he's getting ready for this profile, his people are all communicating with the writer and saying like, hey, maybe don't make this story about how Tom Hanks is so nice. Like,
yeah,
we can't keep having articles about him being nice. Like, there's so much more to this guy. Don't be so obvious. And it's kind of a trap that you and I fall into on this show too. It's so easy to just be like, he's an awesome dude.
Yeah.
He's perfect. He makes great career choices. He's untouchable.
Well, it strips away the idea of like, as a human, what makes him tick and fascinating.
And it's the same thing that Mr. Rogers.
Yeah. I think we do it as a joke, but it's true. There is, I think these are the things that make him so interesting.
Yeah, so that's a kind of an excellent companion piece to read in conjunction with seeing the movie. I do think the performance was incredible. I don't think it's his like best performance, obviously. I think there are plenty of... But in the context of the story and of the movie, I think it's just it's a nice... It's a great... I mean, what's the last movie that he was in? Toy Story 4?
Yeah.
And then what was it before that? Oh, The Post.
Yeah.
So different characters from him. It's nice to be able to see those. Oh, and in the article, sorry, the reason why I even brought it up, he wanted to do the movie because of the director, because she was a woman. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I saw there was some interview with him talking about her and how he came in doing sort of his her direction for how he needed to behave as Mr. Rogers like took him by surprise, because he was trying to just imitate him.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, no, you have to, I think she said you had to thank him. And he was like, well, I thanked him. And she's like, no, you have to thank him. Like, it means everything to you and you have to mean that. And then this was like the first day, I think he said, and he was like, oh, it's that kind of movie. Like he like the first day realized that this was far beyond, this is going to be a lot deeper than he anticipated, which is really cool.
How neat that someone like Tom is still getting like challenged like that in his work. That's fucking incredible.
It's cool. It's great. We're coming to the end of 2019. I think this is definitely one to put on the top of your list to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Watching with the family.
Yeah.
Well, maybe the older family.
Yeah. And then just watch regular Mr. Rogers with the kids.
Exactly.
That's final all thoughts of the movie. Huh? Yeah. If I was going to say final thoughts.
I thought it was great.
Yeah.
4 out of 5.
I love it. So, I guess it's time for a segment we haven't done in so long.
What could it be?
It's called Hank's Happenings.
I forgot as well, but I caught on.
I mean, it's the obvious. Tom Hanks was nominated for a Globe for Best Supporting Actor in a drama? Oops.
Yeah, I mean, drama. That sounds right.
Not the comedy. That would be insane.
Yeah. No, Best Supporting Actor in Motion Picture.
Love that for him. Exciting. I mean, he's got some pretty stiff competition this year. It's pretty incredible, like, movies out.
Yeah.
But the supporting actor role could be less... Who's he up against?
He is up against Anthony Hopkins for Two Popes, Al Pacino, and Joe Pesci from The Irishman, and Brad Pitt from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Holy shit, yeah.
So very solid. I haven't seen Two Popes, but everything else, if any of those people won... Joe Pesci's amazing in Irishman. Mm-hmm. Brad Pitt's amazing.
I will not be able to sit through Irishman, I'm going to be honest.
You could do it if you look watch it like a TV series. Like
I've read that.
30 minutes, 45 minutes.
I just like don't even know that it's the kind of storytelling that I'm drawn towards.
There's so much good stuff out.
I know. My time is so precious. Yeah. I'm too busy looking up Baby Yoda GIFs.
Yeah, that's important.
He should take up at least 3 hours of my life. Cool. So that will be exciting to see what other kind of awards buzz that this movie gets. I wish that I forgot her name, the director, would have gotten any kind of recognition because she did some cool shit.
Yeah.
But
the Golden Globe, you know what? I'll keep it there.
Yeah. What's next?
What's next? Well, we'll come back.
This is the last show of the year.
It's the last show of the year. Happy 2019.
Yeah, thanks for being here with us another year.
And we'll be back on track for 2020.
Yeah.
We'll start out the year with Cloud Atlas.
Yes.
Which, spoiler alert, wait, it's not Cloud Atlas. We'll start out the year with Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close.
Yes.
That frame of thinking caused an issue, which is why we have had an episode in a little bit. We recorded an episode for Cloud Atlas, and then realized we skipped
Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close.
So Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close will start 2020.
Yeah.
And then Cloud Atlas will come afterwards. And Cloud Atlas will be slightly strange because we're going to talk about stuff that we did in summer.
Yeah.
But that's fine. It's like a little...
It's literally the plot of Cloud Atlas.
Yeah, it makes sense. It is wacky out of time.
Time is a flat circle, man.
So if that one sounds a little bit weird, that'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, so those are our next two.
Great.
And then I'm afraid... Hold on. It's worth looking up.
It's probably Angels and Demons, or no.
What's it called? Inferno or something? Hold on. Okay, no, we still got some time before Inferno. The next one is Captain Phillips.
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay, cool.
I actually have a weird deja vu of this exact conversation happening in another episode.
It's probably at the end of Cloud Atlas. It's
definitely at the end of Cloud Atlas.
Okay, so Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close. Cloud Atlas. Captain Phillips. Saving Mr. Banks, which I've never seen.
Okay.
Bridge of Spies, which we saw together. Mm-hmm. And then Hologram for the King, Sully, Inferno, The Circle,
We're
the
catching
Post.
Up on,
then we're
like,
caught up.
Modern Tom.
2020, we catch up.
That's nuts.
Wow. But he has three movies currently in post-production for 2020, one of which he wrote. So, we'll have, I mean, there'll be plenty of Tom in the year ahead. And we'll freaking find more Tom for the year ahead.
Oh, we will find Tom.
Don't think we won't.
Well, it's been a pleasure to do another year with you, Daniel.
Absolutely. Same to you. I hope London's treating you well.
Thanks. I hope you're having a nice time in Oklahoma.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Well,
where can you find us if people need a little reminder?
Well, we are still paying for the domain for talkintom.com.
Yeah.
Which is talking without the G, tom.com. We've also got a Facebook group. We've got a SoundCloud. We got Twitter. We got Instagram. We got all this stuff. Same handle for that.
Pod Hanks Tomcast.
It's great. We're always there. You know, we'll put stuff on there sometime. And I guess that's it. My name's Josie.
My name's Daniel.
Thanks so much for listening. Oh, fuck! Oh my God.
How about
Hanks for listening.